Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. KD has excelled in these spots. Delivery in the air to right field, hit pretty good, back near the wall, looking, and goodbye home run! The Orioles have come back and tied it up in the ninth inning with two down on a line shot by Trumbo. 0-1 delivery to Chris, in the air, center, near the warning track, near the wall, and goodbye home run! He got it! Chris Davis delivers the long ball to lead off inning number 12. And the Orioles are back on top 9-8. Rodriguez, a towering fly ball. Way back in right field. The midnight hour and goodbye home run. The crusher did just that. And the Orioles are back on top by 2, 13-11. Runner goes, 1-2. Grounder to second, right into the runner. Flaherty's got it, and it's over. 5 hours and 19 minutes it took to play this one. And in the first meeting of the year, the Orioles get a 13-11 win.
Roller coaster, and they did. They give the offense, especially really J.D. Martinez, got us back in the game initially. They did an outstanding job of fighting back. The 7-run third obviously stung early. They fought back, and then they fought back in extra innings with a 3-run deficit. Not K-Rod or Sanchi. I know you like to point fingers and blame people, but that's not how it works. We're a team. You know, even before K-Rod got in there, they had the lead, and we fought back and tied it.
No, I'm not pointing fingers and blaming anybody.
Yes, you are.
No, but
always do. That's what you do. You know, no bullpen is perfect. Do you think the Baltimore Orioles bullpen is perfect? They also have a 3-run lead. So there's no perfect bullpen out there. There's some that are perform better than others. There's some that have a little more talent than others. But there's no perfect bullpen. Nobody's perfect. There's no bullpen with a zero ERA. That's just not how it works.
Final second ticks off the clock. And the Golden State Warriors, 10 postseason games, 10 postseason wins, halfway to a return to the NBA final.
I think tonight, it's not what I expected, disappointed. And the only way I can process is I think it's not about O's and X's or rebounds or turnovers or anything like that. I think we've maybe felt it too much, Kawhi being gone, in the sense that as I watched, I don't think they believed. And you have to believe. And I don't think as a group they really did. That's the way I process it. I don't think they started the game with the belief. You can't sugarcoat it or say if we would have just made a couple shots, we'd have been right there. That's pretty lame. Call it like it is. We didn't come to play. We felt sorry for ourselves. We need to get slapped and come back and play game three and see who we are. That's what I'm anxious for.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, I got to tell you, I like what I heard on a pop there. As a matter of fact, I wish my own staff, Jim Cushlin and Frank Gargano understood that a little bit better. You heard what Pop just said. You need to get slapped a little bit. You know, if you guys, that's what we got to do. Maybe that's what we got to do to get better around here. You guys got to get slapped a little bit, and then we'll come back and see what you're really made of. What
we
do you
found
think?
The answer.
There it is. Yeah, hold still for a second. I might have something here for you. Hold still just real quick, will you please? All right, now you're holding a little too still. You're laying there. All right, welcome to the extravaganza. Thanks for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader, and we welcome you to the program, and we'll welcome you to the phone lines if you are ready to make calls, really, at any point, because we don't have a guest today until 4:30, 4:35 or so. We are going to talk a little bit about the game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight, not with a Cavaliers reporter, but we go behind enemy lines, if you will. Jeff Clark is going to join us from CelticsBlog.com and SB Nation and talk about things from the Boston side of things. By the way, speaking of the Boston side of things, pretty nice night, pretty nice week, really, the last couple of days anyway, for the Boston Celtics. You beat Washington in Game 7 two nights ago on Monday to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, one of the NBA's Final Four. You know, nobody phrases it that way, do they? You know, and that's the biggest thing about the March Madness tournament, the Final Four. Out of 300 and some odd, Division I programs, it's down to the final. This is the Final Four, is where we are now in the NBA. The Final Four are Golden State, San Antonio, and Cleveland and Boston. So it's a big deal for them. So they're in the Final Four. And 2 days later, after going into the Final Four, they get the number one overall pick in the NBA's upcoming draft. Because of the way the ping pong ball lottery goes, the Celtics get the number one pick last night. The LA Lakers come up with number two. And of course, the Philadelphia 76ers seemingly perpetually in the top two or three of the draft. They will pick third in this this upcoming summer draft. So last night, did you guys watch the NBA lottery at all?
I ended up watching a little bit of it. Yeah.
Is your wife really? Your wife must have been out of the house.
At that moment, yes.
Your child's out of the house.
Well,
because anything would be more interesting than watching that stupid ping pong ball.
That's why it was only a few pieces of it here.
I figured you must be alone, because if your wife is there and you're watching that instead of her, you probably need to see a counselor. Okay, I would talk to my wife. I would talk to my puppy before I bought, because I mean, all I needed was what I got. Now for me, I happened to be at my son's basketball practice. That's why I didn't watch it, but I didn't need to, because guess what happened right when it was over. I got a little alert come across my smartphone. Boston Celtics get first pick in NBA draft lottery. Oh, look at that. Great. That's all I needed to know. And then who was second? And done. I didn't need to watch it, because there's just so, you know, there's just only so many times you can see Dan Gilbert's son stand there and say, what's not to like? That was cute. That was great. You know, just a wonderful little kid, a special needs kid who represented Dan Gilbert when the Cavaliers were picking first, or excuse me, were in the NBA lottery and won the lottery. Twice, of course, we all remember. The first was a huge hit. I mean, three times overall. LeBron, then Kyrie Irving, huge hit. But then the Anthony Bennett one, not so much. He's out of basketball. In fact, and he might be playing. Is he playing in Canada? I want to say he might be playing in Canada.
No, he was playing earlier this year. In Turkey, and Turkey. They cut him.
Did they really?
Straight up unemployed.
Wow, so just out of it all. Yep. Okay. Anyway, the point is, isn't Nick Gilbert Dan Gilbert's son? I think it's Nick.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, and you remember the interview he did, you know, talking about what's not to like. And it was just such a great, you know, heartwarming kind of a thing. But outside of a moment like that, and you only get those once in a blue moon, you can only see one like that, well, you ever saw, it's boring. You know, yay, Magic Johnson got second pick, and he pumped his fist. Hey, and then I don't even know who the heck represented the Celtics up there, but all right, great. Well, who are you going to pick? Well, we don't know. We'll figure it out. It's a boring night. It's silly. Having said all that, however, the results of the draft lottery last night are not boring. The results lead to some very, very interesting conversations. Things seem to be lined up, it would appear. Now, the Celtics have some choices to make, obviously. The best player in the draft, according to virtually all expert analysts, player personnel directors, and scouts, is Markel Fultz, the point guard from Washington. He's a scoring guard. The second best player, and you might even flip-flop these two guys, but it doesn't matter because it's Lonzo Ball, and he's a scorer. He's a distributing point guard, but he's also a point guard. The Boston Celtics have an all-star point guard who averaged about 28 points a game this year. Doesn't exactly work. Now, some are suggesting the Celtics might trade that draft pick, and that is one of their options, certainly. They might trade it for an established player. Now that, because remember, they almost traded their pick, unknown, you know, what number it would be, prior to the deadline,
right,
to the Chicago Bulls in a package with Jay Crowder for an established all-star like Jimmy Butler. And there was even talk that they were going to trade it to the Pacers for Paul George, you know, to really be a complimentary scorer, which, by the way, would be very dangerous. It would make the Celtics, I believe, a very dangerous team if they had an Isaiah Thomas and an established wing player like one of those guys. Better than Jay Crowder. You know, Jay Crowder does a lot of really good things, but he's not, you know, superstar caliber.
Right. Anyway.
So there was talk that they were going to do that anyway. Now, of course, the talk is more. Now that they know what it is, it's the number one overall pick. Their price would probably be higher. You know, talking about Pacers, if the Pacers wanted to trade Paul George, or excuse me, if the Celtics wanted to acquire a Paul George from the Pacers, you know, now that they're getting the number one pick, it's probably going to take Paul George and more. You know, maybe another player, maybe another pick of theirs down the road or something of that nature, because it's now we know it's the number one pick. So they could do that. They could also trade back. Not often a common thing in the NBA. It's more of an NFL thing. I think we all agree on that.
Yep.
But they could maybe go down a couple of spots if they would rather take a player at a position Because this is a little different than football. You know, in football, it's oftentimes it's the best player available, not necessarily by position. Because there's so many positions on a football field, if you can get a great player in any of them, that's what you got to do.
Not to mention that the team needs, I think, plays a lot more into the NFL versus the NBA draft. In NBA, most of the time, you just got to go for whoever's best on your board still left, really.
Okay, well, then you and I see this the exact opposite, because that's the exact opposite of what I just said. So we see this differently.
Yeah, I guess
so. In the NFL, there are so many positions and so many positions of need, you take the best player available, no matter what position he plays, because you can use him because there are so many of them. With the exception of maybe if you have Aaron Rodgers, you don't take a quarterback if you happen to get the number one pick. But by and large, you're going to take the best player available. In the NBA, where there are only five positions on the court, if you've got, you know, LeBron James at the three, you don't take a three. If you've got, you know, Chris Paul or Steph Curry or somebody at the one, or even in this case, Isaiah Thomas, you probably don't really want to take a one. You want to draft by position here. Isaiah Thomas is a superstar, going to be a max out player after next year, probably, and he needs a scoring wing to help him. So they may look at trading back a couple of spots and taking the best wing player available, you know, as opposed to taking a point guard like Markelle Fultz, who plays the same position as Isaiah Thomas. Case in point, the 76ers, who back-to-back-to-back, it seems like, took a center with three straight number one picks. And if you help me out in remembering this, I think it was Nerlens Noel, the first one. Then it was Jahlil Okafor. And then it was Joel Embiid. In three years out of four, they had the top pick, right?
Yeah, those are the three.
And they all took the same position player, and then they didn't know what to do, so they had to trade them.
And I think the only thing you got wrong there is I think Embiid and Okafor switched, because remember, Embiid missed that first full season.
I know they did, but I just couldn't remember what order they came in. But because Embiid just played his first quote-unquote full season.
Exactly.
He'll probably still win the Rookie of the Year award, even though he only played 35 out of 82 games. Which is goofy, but anyway, you see what I'm saying? I mean, you know, you can't just say, in my opinion, Jim, so it's different than yours, and I'll let you respond to it, but in the NBA, you can't just take the best player available, because if it plays the same position that you've already taken somebody for last year, as in Philadelphia, you got a glut of centers, and you got no point guard, or you got no shooting guard, you got no, you know, backcourt leverage, you got a ton of, you know, centers, and then they ended up trading Okafor, didn't they?
Yeah. No, they traded Noel. Noel they sent to Dallas.
Oh, yeah, but weren't they trading Okafor too? Because they were going
to
build around Embiid.
They were trying to, I thought.
But it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But you see my point. I mean, there's only 12 spots on a roster and only 5 spots on the floor. You can't take best player available in the NBA. You take best player at the position that you need more. Now, if you suck, if you're just awful, like the Cavs were, when they picked first in 2003, you take the best player no matter who he is and what he plays. If LeBron James would have been a center, you take him. If he would have been a point guard, you take him. And if he would have been a three, you take him. It doesn't matter. If you're terrible at all positions, you take the best player. But if you are a team like the Celtics, who are not terrible at point guard and who are not terrible at two guard, but you really have some wing needs, then you probably might want to look at taking a wing here. So to me, I think the NFL is where you can do the best player available thing, not so much in the NBA. But you disagreed with that.
The reason I kind of disagree with a little of that, Bob, is because, you know, remember the dynamics. We've gone over this before, and I'm sure we'll go over it a little bit more, you know, later next month when we approach the NBA draft, is that it's the part of the dynamic of the NBA draft. How many times have we said, once you get past about, let's call it 7th or 8th, odds are of you getting a star drastically fall off the cliff.
Oh, I agree, but that's why I'm not talking about just anywhere in the first round. I'm talking about the lottery guys, especially in the top three or four.
Now, the top three or four, I agree with that. But if you're like the Pistons, who are now 12th after last night's lottery, I think when it comes their turn, they just have to figure out who's the best guy and make him and put him on the bench, see if he can take a starting spot.
No doubt, but the truth of the matter is, Jim, is that the second thing of my point applies there. They need help everywhere. I don't think there's any one position where you can say, man, they're loaded at that spot. Don't draft that position. Draft another position. If the best player is a center, even though you have Drummond, you still take him because you need front court depth and strength.
Sure.
You know, and certainly you need a one or two. I mean, I don't care who you are. None of those guys are first team all NBA. You take the best player available, no matter what position, if you're a team like Detroit. So the point I'm making is, you know, like, for example, with the Lakers, and this will transition into the Lonzo Ball conversation that I want to have. Taking a look at the Lakers, you know, who's playing point guard for the Lakers? It's D'Angelo Russell. Why? Well, because they need him to. Is he a natural point guard? No, he's really not. He's much better as a two guard. It would make perfect sense for the Lakers to take a Markelle Fultz or a Lonzo Ball, whichever one is there at two, because they need a point guard who also just happens to be the best player, you know, best available player, regardless of position. So it works. But if the best player, let's say, you know, I guess I can't go back any further than the one that's in front of us. You know, Boston has a superstar point guard. Isaiah Thomas is an all-NBA caliber point guard and an all-star and a 28 points per game guy. I just don't see the sense in taking a point guard unless you are going to then trade him or trade Isaiah Thomas before his contract is up and he becomes a free agent, which I don't know if anybody would do either. Unless you're going to trade him, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. You take the best player in a position where he can help you now, especially if you are a Celtics type of team. You're in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you might be that one great player away from finally being able to challenge the Cavaliers for supremacy in the East and get to a Finals. Having two great scoring point guards, Fultz and Thomas, doesn't do much for you when only one of them is on the floor and the other one's waiting to come in for that guy. But if you got a great wing scorer to join Thomas and some of the, you know, some of the dirty work that the bigs like Olynyk and Crowder and those guys do there, now you're really, you know, in a great position. So you can afford to pick the player that fits your team best and not the one that's just the, quote, best available player.
And that's an interesting dynamic because of it being the Celtics who got the number one because that was originally Brooklyn's pick and that stupid Pearson-Garnett trade from, gosh, yeah, like 4 years ago now. And it's also a rarity that you have something like this. I'm cruising around a little bit on Twitter late last night, and I had to retweet something that our good friends at SB Nation's Detroit Bad Boys. We've had some of their guys on the program over time. They had a great tweet basically saying, "Good luck, Celtics, because the last time a team in the conference finals picked in the top three, this happened, and it was a giant picture of Darko." Because these things, when you have a team of this stature like the Celtics are right now, having them in the top three of the draft is a rarity.
Yeah, exactly. It certainly is. So, at any rate, let's move now to the larger point here. Since you were talking about Twitter, trending right now on Twitter is the father of UCLA freshman and soon to be top draft pick, one of the top draft picks, Lonzo Ball, LaVar Ball. I declared on this program, I don't know, a month ago maybe, somewhat toward the beginning of the rise to infamy of LaVar Ball and the Big Baller brand. And I say infamy for those who do not know because it's not fame, it's infamy. It means you're famous and well-known for the wrong reasons, not for something good. But the rise in infamy of LaVar Ball kind of started a couple months ago, and I don't know, it was toward the beginning. Anyway, I was intrigued and interested, like everybody else. During the NCAA tournament in March, I was intrigued to see exactly how good Lonzo Ball was because that was around the time that his father started talking mess about how the Warriors would be better with his kid than they are with Steph Curry and that Steph Curry on UCLA wouldn't make UCLA better than they are now, that kind of a thing. And, oh, by the way, I would beat Michael Jordan one-on-one because I'm that good in my prime. And all of that stuff just kind of started making its way to the top of the sports scene. And I was intrigued and interested and curious, and I chuckled a little bit, especially about the back and forth, you know, goofball match with Stephen A. Smith and some of the others at ESPN and on some of the other networks as well. And it's just so silly. And then he started bringing race into the equation. UCLA lost in the finals in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky because they started three white boys who have slow feet, and white boys can't play. Lonzo can't win with guys like that. I thought, okay, here we go. Then he starts with he's only going to the Lakers. Nobody else to even think about it. He's only going to the Lakers because they're from Chino Hills. That's where he's always wanted to play, so that's where he's going to play, period. Then he started with his, no, I don't want a shoe deal. Lonzo, my boys don't need shoe deals. We got our own we got our own products. We got our own brand. We got our own Triple B, our own big baller brands. And if any of the big shoe companies want a piece of this, come to me with a billion. Not a million. Come to me with a billion, with a B. Because that's what my boy's brand is going to be worth. Okay. Then he's going on TV and telling everybody about Lonzo and the transformational player he's going to be, et cetera, et cetera. Then he puts out the shoe line. It's going to be $495 a pair, which is probably a full $200 more than the shoes, the most expensive shoes ever sold by the greatest of all time, the GOAT Michael Jordan, by LeBron James, the four-time MVP. Two of the kings in the shoe game, Jordan with Airman and King James. Jumpman, I mean, not Airman, excuse me, Jumpman and King James. And this kid who's never played in the NBA before is going to be $495. What are you, crazy? Slides, which is the hip name or the street name for flip-flops or sandals. Big Baller Brand Slides. The Zoes, yeah, those are going to be $295. Wait, what? Or no, $225. $225, I think. What's the difference? Put that two in front of it, it's over. Game over anyway. Put the one in front of it, it's game over anyway. Put the 55 in front of it, and I might buy a pair. Just 55. Anyway. Oh, somewhere along the way, and I came on the radio and said this about a month ago, I said, you know what? I've heard enough, and I've seen enough. Something is happening to me. You guys probably remember me saying this. I can feel myself becoming something I don't want to become here. I can feel myself becoming a hater. I have officially started to root, through no fault of his own, but I have officially started to root against Lonzo Ball. And it's not his fault. It's his father's fault. And I've said on the radio, I wouldn't touch Lonzo Ball in the draft. Because what do you think is going to happen the moment the mouth that roared, LaVar Ball, pulls on the NBA team what he pulled on UCLA and started criticizing the teammates, the three white boys who didn't have quick enough feet? What happens when he starts criticizing Lonzo's teammates when the Lakers or whomever are losing?
So basically bad-mouthing Timofey Mozgov.
Well, no, because, I mean, it doesn't have to be just for the white boy part, and I know you're joking. But it wouldn't have to be that, but it just, any of them. If you criticize the other players for whatever reason, what are those players going to do? Those players are going to turn around and resent the hell out of Lonzo for it. And it's going to create friction in the locker room. It's going to create friction in warm-ups. It's going to create friction at practice. It's going to create friction during the games. And it's not something I would want to be a part of if I was drafting. And I said, secondly, because of Mr. Billion with a B, LaVar Triple B, Big Baller Brand Ball, I've essentially said, I want him to fail. And the best way to make him fail would be for Lonzo's brand to not be worth jack squat because he's a 6-3 player. 6 points, 3 assists a game. Hell, he could be an 11-point, 5-assist-a-game guy. He could be 11-7, and it's still crap. Compared to the point guards in this league today, shoot. I want him to be either a flop or just an average NBA player. That's what I've wanted. Not because of him, and I feel bad. I tweeted this about, I don't know, an hour ago. I tweeted that I feel bad. I legit feel bad for Lonzo Ball because I have become a hater of him and his game, not because of him, but because of his father. And I want him to flop. And that's a terrible thing to wish on an 18 or 19-year-old, or I guess he'd be 19-year-old kid. It's a terrible thing, but it's legit. It's not for ratings. It's not for controversy purposes. I'm watching the father. And I don't want him to succeed. I don't want him to make his $1 billion. I don't want him treating people with the disrespect that he does to be paid off for it. I want him to have a huge, massive slice, no, a hole, no, a truckload of whole humble pies. I want Lonzo to be an average player, never making an all-star team, and thus not worth not $495 a pair, $49.50 a pair for his shoes. That's what I want. And for the two younger ones as well, sorry, kids, you were born into the same situation. Until he calms down, I'm not going to be rooting for you guys to be overly successful for his benefit. Now, I want to take that, all of that, and add it on to what happened earlier today and why is LeVar Ball trending. LeVar Ball went on a talk show on FS1, the Fox Sports network on television, and he was talking to the host of that show, Colin Cowherd, who used to be at ESPN. The co-host of that show is a girl named Christine Leahy, who's a relatively well-known sports broadcaster. She does the, what's the game you guys, where the jack-of-all-trade athletes are kind of put through this obstacle course?
She hosts American Ninja Warrior.
Ninja Warrior, that's it, yeah. I was going to say it's like a manufactured one. It's not like, you know, the military kind, like Stone
right.
Cold. You ever see the Stone Cold one? Steve Austin's obstacle course.
I do remember. Oh, my gosh. I've forgotten about that. I do kind of remember that.
Oh, that's not a remember thing. That's ongoing. I think he's going into season 3 or 4 of this show.
Is he really with that? Wow.
Oh, yeah. My son and I watch it, and we love it. Mainly because, I mean, first of all, it's testosterone, right? I mean, you know, it's a bunch of big, heavily muscle dudes fighting one another in a variety of
right.
physical and strength type things, and it's stamina things, and Stone Cold is hilarious because of his language and his delivery. He's hilarious. I mean, he's just such a great personality. We love that show. But anyway, thank you, guys. It's the American Ninja Warrior one. That's one that's much more sterile. It's with pads and water and all kinds of other crap.
Yeah, I've seen that one, too.
So that's what Christina's on. Anyway, she's the co-host of this show, and LeVar Ball came in today, and he was only talking to the host, Colin Cowherd. This is why he's trending on Twitter right now. He turned his back to Christine Leahy and refused to turn around and look at her. And when she finally tried to become part of the interview about the shoes and asked a question, to say that he became disrespectful would be an enormous understatement. As a matter of fact, Colin, the host of that television show, is getting all kinds of Twitter hate for not stepping in and standing up for his co-host and her for Christine Leahy, because LeVar Ball is just that much of an ass. Now, she didn't back down. She tried to keep coming at him and asking legit questions. She wasn't disrespectful. She was just, why? Why won't you talk to me? Why won't you look at me? And he's mad at her for some previous comments, like the rest of the sports world, which is why he does this, by the way. Everybody in sports media talks about LeVar Ball. You're either Team LeVar and you love what he is doing for his kids, or you are, what the hell is wrong with this lunatic, and you are anti-LeVar. Well, she's been anti in a couple of different things, particularly when as it pertains to the Big Baller brand and the billion-dollar demand and the shoes and whatnot. So she just had an opinion on his stuff in the same way that everybody else does, but he reacts to her extraordinarily differently than he does anybody else who's ever criticized him. And I want to play this for you. It's about a minute long, this part of it. It was actually what happened on TV today happened in about three different chunks, but here's the first chunk, and it's worth listening to.
Boss, have you sold any shoes yet?
Yeah, I've sold a good amount to me. Like I said, there's different amounts.
How many?
Stay in your lane.
Wait, anyway, what's going on? I'm just curious.
Now, for the optics of this, I have to describe it to you because we're on radio and I'm watching a TV show here. He put up his hand without looking at her. He kept looking at the host and put up his hand as in talk to the hand in her direction and just said, you heard it, stay in your lane. And it got worse from there.
Stay in your lane.
I'm just curious.
I don't even worry about her over there.
Every time she scares me to death.
She says she scares Lonzo. Lonzo's scared of me. She scares me. That's why I don't look that way. I don't look over there because she scares me. Well, I'm thinking of Saul right now.
I'm just trying.
Leave me alone. I'll tell you, 400-500 pair.
So she's a reporter. Her job is to play.
She can report to whoever she want behind her.
I'm talking to you, Colin. Well, what is your problem with me?
Hey, my problem is you are a hater.
Why?
I would never wear a Big Baller shirt.
But no, good.
Don't even
that.
Talk to me. But I heard you say, I'm not even wearing it.
I said that I wouldn't wear something that
it says
a woman.
Big Baller. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
With all due respect, you're a great reporter, just not reporting on me.
I have a right to say what shirt I would and wouldn't wear.
Uh-oh. Welcome to Big Baller Zone.
That was just the first part. As I said, it got much, much more disrespectful and much worse from there. He proceeded to criticize another critic of his, Jason Whitlock, who happens to be, let's just say he's not a marathon runner. Because I'm not trying to be, you know, disrespectful either. He's a bigger guy. And he called him Snacks Whitlock. And the only thing he's capable or qualified to report on is snacks. Now, mind you, this is the same guy, by the way, this LeVar Ball, who constantly says critics don't bother him. He don't care what anybody says. I don't care what nobody says. I would beat Michael Jordan. I would beat Charles Barkley. My prime, I'm undefeated in one-on-one games. And my son is going to be the greatest player in the history of the sport. Blah, 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 blah. I don't care what anybody says. And yet here he is expressing that he kind of cares pretty much what everybody says, especially if they are critical of him. Now, again, it got worse than that. The disrespect that he continued to show to this reporter is, in my estimation, indefensible. It is especially indefensible because Colin Cowherd did not stand up for her. Now, I don't mean that in a misogynist way, like he needs to protect the woman. Chivalry should be alive here. Protect the. Now, you think she did a fine job standing up for herself.
Yeah, she did.
And I don't care. Did you watch it?
Yes, I did. I thought it was just, I still can't believe it. I thought she handled it very well.
She did. However, I think Colin Cowherd should have stood up to him more on her behalf, not because she's a female, but because she is a co-host.
Right.
She's a legit part of his show. And every time she would kind of question LeVar and he would say something else disrespectful to her, Cowherd would just move on and ask him another question about the shoes or whatever and never really stopped and said, no, LeVar, if you're going to be here as a guest on this show, you're going to talk to the hosts. She's one of them. We're not going to let you be disrespectful to my staff here. Again, not out of some misplaced idea of I have to protect the woman, but
right.
Simply because this is our show. We're a team. Don't do that. And he continued to do that. And it was terrible, and that's why he's trending. And one of the first things that I saw when I looked him up on Twitter after I saw that this afternoon, early afternoon, one of the first things that I saw was, all sports, television, and radio should collude with one another and agree to blackball LeVar Ball. Do not put him on. And when he treats people the way he just treated her, for daring to have a difference of opinion, and by the way, all she was doing was talking about his brand not being really particularly marketed to females. Big baller. I mean, it doesn't take a reach there to see what they're saying. If you're not a big baller, that means you don't have big ball, you know, the idea here. It's a male reference, obviously. You got to be a big baller, you know, and you got, which means you got to have big, you know, what's in order to do what Lonzo and my boys do, and to wear his shoes. You can't afford $495. Remember, that's one of their marketing slogans. You can't afford $495. Maybe you're just not a big baller. That's their actual marketing here, right?
Yeah.
So she was basically saying, you know, I would never wear that shirt because you got to do something here for the females if you're going to try to market. And that was her point to this. He didn't want any of it because it was critical of him. So I want to play a little bit more.
Well, no, I think I actually was saying it as like a point. No, I didn't say it. No. I didn't say it was offensive. I didn't say it was offensive.
Yeah.
I just said, you know, if you want to, you know, work with Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour to maybe have something that appeals to women.
I thought that was a legit. I mean, I don't have to agree, but I thought that was a pretty good point.
I don't agree with her. I don't agree.
But I thought it was a good point.
No, I'm actually saying it as like a point of advice.
I'm not friends with her. I don't even see it.
I wasn't saying it as like I would never wear this.
What's this show about again? Ain't we talking about shoes? I don't want to talk about all that. Next.
Well, I think in order to have a successful company, you're going to have women who like your brand.
Yeah.
It's a very fair point. It is the correct point.
Yep.
And again, for the optics here that you don't have because this is radio, he refuses to turn around and look at her. The disrespect is just so thick in the room. And to me, again, it's really a problem for me that the main host of the show didn't say to him, LeVar, talk to her as well. This is a team interview. Don't do this. This is wrong. It makes you look bad. It makes us look bad. And there was no standing up for her as a broadcaster.
If you have a women's company. But anyways.
Oh, so you're not
about,
marketing.
We're talking about Big Baller Brand.
Okay. So,
you know, he don't need no credibility to say I'm a gangster and I do this and I do that. No, Lonzo's a ball player. He is who he is. And like I said, and going back to Whitlock, I don't think he can comment on anything but snacks.
Now, that's a little harsh.
It's going to be harsh because he want to be harsh
so
on me.
So you disrespect women and people for their weight?
No, that's what you say. I didn't say nothing about no weight.
No, you just said that to me.
Like I told her, I'm not even worried about you right now. Keep in your lane.
Can you look
like
me in the eye?
Again, another keep in your lane.
I don't want to look at you now. You scare me to death.
Oh.
Like I said, compliment.
Thank you.
Yes.
They wouldn't want to work with you anyway because you don't respect women, so...
She's after you today.
Oh, I don't respect women, but I'm the one that's married. I'm good. Well, she can say what she wants. She's trying to put it. I never disrespect women. But I tell you what, if you act like that, guess what? Something's coming to you.
Oh.
And it's okay.
Do you think...
Are you threatening me?
Oh, see how she tried to turn the words? I would never threaten you.
You said something's coming to me.
I don't know what it is. I'm not a psychic.
Oh.
So we'll end it there. I bring all of this up again, as I said, because last night's draft lottery, things worked out presumably in the Ball's favor. The Lakers got the number 2 pick. Assuming Markelle Fultz goes either to the Celtics or to somebody else in a trade with the Celtics, Lonzo Ball would be there for Magic Johnson to take with the 2nd pick. It is my most fervent hope and prayer. Oh, and by the way, one little follow-up or side note to that story. LaVar Ball also made an announcement earlier today. Perhaps you guys saw this too. Lonzo will not work out for any team in this draft other than the Lakers. That's it. Which is why it's my most fervent hope and prayer here that the Lakers pass on him at number 2. And when he goes to number 3 or 4 or 5 or wherever it is, that place that he didn't work out, a place that he has no interest in being, in a place where his father's going to raise all kinds of holy hell, that it only makes Lonzo's road to success in the NBA that much more difficult. Because this guy has crossed some lines. And you know what? Sadly, because he's irrelevant, there's no way to hurt him. Except for what? Through the kid. It's the only way. The only way for him to feel the pain of the error of his ways is to see his kid flop. To see his billions turn into nothing but dirt. Nothing but broken dreams. And shattered words. I hope this dude flops. I hope the Lakers pass on him. And I welcome your thoughts on it at 866-240-1065 after this.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 3:54, short segment here. Let's squeeze in a couple of phone calls if we can before the top of the hour. We're going to talk a little bit more about the NBA playoffs, the actual games coming up in the 2nd hour, especially with our friend from the Celtics blog. Jason Clark going to join us from Celtics blog to talk about game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Jerome is in Toledo. You're now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jerome, thanks for calling, man. Go right ahead.
Here's my situation. The sins of the father, and I really don't want him to have to none of his kids to have to answer for the father's sins. The other thing, ignorance, I've always been told that I would rather be thought of as ignorant than to open my mouth and remove all doubt.
That's one of the great lessons that my parents told me very early on, and most parents have. I think we've all heard that before. It's better to, the way she said it, or my mother, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. And
there you go.
And that's well said, Jerome. To your point about Lonzo and the sins of the father, I don't disagree. Like I said, I feel really bad for having this feeling of you know, wishing Lonzo failure just to shut LaVar Ball up. I feel bad about it for the kid. But in truth, until he says something, and he's been pretty closed-mouthed about everything, until he says something like, Dad wants me to go to the Lakers, only
right.
The Lakers. I just
right.
want to be in the NBA. Until
right.
he says, Dad feels the way he feels, and I love my father, but for me, I just want to play somewhere where I can be successful and have a chance at a championship. And I respect the hell out of Steph Curry. I don't believe that I would be better, that you know, the Warriors would be better with me. That's just my dad. My dad's proud of me, and I love him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm waiting for him to do some distancing right. here without being disrespectful of his pops.
That was my next thing. I want to say, if I remember correctly, because I'm out of the box in Luke because it's so boring,
mm-hmm.
but I thought that didn't he have to remove himself from his dad before he became successful?
What do you mean by remove himself from him?
Well, I think it, I should say remove distance. I thought he had to distance himself from his father because when he first started, his father was his trainer, I thought.
You might be right. I don't know Money May's history as well, maybe as you do. I think you're right, and I think he did. Yeah, now that you're saying it, I'm trying to remember it. I think he took steps forward and became a better fighter when he had different people advising him, training him, cornering right. him, et cetera. So, yeah, there is something to that.
And I'm looking at that in the same thing. And there's one more thing, and then I'm done.
Sure.
I would like to think that, and I said this before about another person, but it's a different text. LeVar Burton, whatever his name, all he needs to be is double jointed so he can bend over and kiss his own behind. but he might not be successful because his mouth might get in the way. Have a nice day, gentlemen.
Thank you, Digger. Oh, thank you, my man. One of the best calls I've taken in quite some time. That is very well done. I thought you were going to say so he can more properly pat himself on the back if you're double jointed, you know, is he, cause truly he thinks that all of, you know, what his three, basketballers, the big baller brand kids are, he's, you know, that they're him. And I love the way he twisted the phrase there. I thought you were going to say to pat himself on the back for the great job he did in making that happen. And instead, yeah, bend over and plant one. Cedric is in Toledo next. Cedric, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Good afternoon. Go right ahead.
Yes, I had a couple comments. One was regarding the term big baller.
Yes.
And that's a slang term. It has nothing to do with sex. That's a slang term for you're not big enough to play unless you can play with the big boys.
I know what a big baller is. I've been around basketball for about 40 years. I know what a big baller is in that regard. I know what a baller is. If you don't think, though, that that's a double entendre, that that's a dual meaning, big baller brand means you can't ball with us unless you got big balls, quite frankly. That's what it is. There's a double meaning there, I think, that they're going for.
Well,
and that's what Christine was trying to say to him. If you want to market, you know, if you really want to make a billion, you can't just sell to half the population, the men. You want to try to sell to the women, too. How about a little something-something for us over here instead of making everything about being, you know, being about big balls?
Well, I've been around that term for years, and I've never heard it expressed in any other way.
Okay, well,
I'm not
like
saying
I said,
it's impossible, but I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that's
and I think in this guy's mind, too, in particular, you know, I mean, because the way he talks and the braggadocious and the, you know, the ego and everything, I mean, that's what he means when he says, well, then maybe you're not a big baller. And it's not because you can't play. A baller is somebody who can ball and somebody who can play. It means maybe you don't have the, you know, what's, to wear our stuff. I think that's totally what he means by that. And he's using the well-known phrase that you and I are talking about here about just being a baller. He's using that as, you know, like I said, the double meaning to really get across his point.
Well, my other point is, the gentleman before me addressed it. I don't like the fact that someone would say, well, I hope the father fails, I hope the kid fails because of his father's, actions. And that's totally wrong. This kid hasn't said anything and he doesn't have to say anything. He's only 19 years old. He doesn't have to say anything. And he's already said it. If you watch his expressions, he doesn't agree. He doesn't smile at what his dad is saying or anything. So he's expressing that he doesn't have an agreement, but he's not going to sit up there and argue.
Well, let's find out. Let's find out. Here's how we'll find out, right? LeVar says that Lonzo isn't working out for anybody but the Lakers. That's LeVar saying that. Let's see if Lonzo says, Dad, I got this. If Philly wants me to come and work out for them and they got the number 3 pick, I want to go work out. If Boston does, they might want to take me number 1. I might go work out. We'll see, because it seems like Lonzo just sits there and says, whatever Dad says, I'm with. If he separates from him by saying, no, I want to be a part of this league. You're the only one who says I'll only play for the Lakers. I've never said that. I want to play somewhere else. Then we'll find out if it really is a 2-for-1 sale there, or if Lonzo can break off on his own. Because I'll tell you what, my man, and Cedric, I got to run. If Lonzo breaks off on his own in some way, I will root for him again, and I really hope he does well. And by the way, I don't think he's going to fail. I think he's going to be very, very good. But that's what I want to see happen. But it seems like everything that LeVar says, he is speaking for Lonzo, and I don't think that's the best thing for the kid. I'm not the only one to say that, by the way. There are a lot of people with lots of experience in the NBA, including Charles Barkley, one of the greatest players of all time and a Hall of Famer, who said he is not helping his kid here at all. Back with hour number two right after this.
The Celtics and the Cavaliers traded home court victories right through Game 5. And as Game 6 opened in the Midwest Coliseum, the home court advantage had led to a 3-2 lead for the Celtics. The Celtics, led by JoJo White and Dave Cowan, jumped down to an early lead. But then Austin Carr, Jim Brewer, and the veteran Nate Thurmond started to bring Cleveland back. The Cavaliers had the ball, and then Charlie Scott's fast hands took that ball down the court, and Scott stopped it. That move gave the Celtics a 3-point lead with a minute and a half in the game. It broke Cleveland's heart, their spirit, as the Celtics went on to take a 7-point victory and the Eastern Conference title.
Bird and Edgar gets around him, puts it up and in, and a foul to go with it. That is vintage Larry Bird. World from downtown. Bingo. World with 10.
And you know, Bird had a hand in his face. That was not an uncontested jumper.
When World is in rhythm, not too many guys can do much about it. Larry Bird, good again. Larry Bird on the right wing will fire and hit. Press 24 for Boston. They can regain the lead with a basket. Bird inside, around and in.
Bird behind the back. How many times have we seen that play? Price pulls up and scores from 15. Elo spots for the three. Rod Williams gets into the act. Williams picks it off and leaves for Elo. Two on one. Hot Rod. Yes. Jordy now checked by McHale. Nance. The 11-year veteran from Clemson with 11 points. Nance. This series had been so close, the total points scored within just two or three. And a loud, sustained standing ovation for the Cleveland Cavaliers, the young and hungry Cavs, equal to the challenge of Game 7 against the more experienced Celtics, and on their way to the Eastern Conference Finals.
And this is why Celtic fans were fearful of the Game 7 against the LeBron James. As Pierce comes back because of what a superstar can do. But on their favor, Paul Pierce is playing like a superstar here this afternoon. James hits a three. That's his first three-pointer here in Boston. Here's the double. Pierce, he's feeling it. Paul Pierce lighting it up. Puts it in. What a top shot for Paul Pierce. James, that's a three. It's good. LeBron James from downtown. Pierce on a drive, on a pull-up. It's good. James and Pierce going back and forth at each other. James will try another three. Knocks it down. Back-to-back threes for LeBron James. James on the drive. Gets inside. A shot. He knocks it down. James with the steal. Here he goes. And James makes it a one-point game. It goes in. 40 points for Pierce. Smith the rebound. Back out. Stolen by Austin. That'll do it. The Celtics are going back to the Eastern Conference Finals. James lost it again. Unbelievable. His ninth turnover of the night. And this is going to be as bitter an end to a season as you can possibly have. The year the Cavs were supposed to win an NBA championship and the year the city of Cleveland was set to celebrate maybe their first title since 64 is going to end in the second round. And LeBron James' season is over. Is his career in Cleveland over? And the Cleveland fans wondering if that's the last time he'll take off a Cavalier jersey.
Olynyk and Love fighting for it. And it's going to be good. Did Love hurt? Did Love hurt himself?
Yes, he did.
His shoulder popped out.
Yeah, he ran right past
He's going right to the locker room. I think his shoulder popped out. So a big moment here as Kevin Love's shoulder popped out.
Key.
Ooh, look out.
Oh, watch out. He's right.
Perkins.
Watch out.
And Crowder and Perkins threw a right jab towards Crowder. And this crowd that loved Kendrick Perkins for many years sees a very angry former Celtic champion being pushed away by former Celtics assistant Tyronn Lue.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow, Jim Cushlin feeling a little bit feisty this afternoon. Had some time on his hands. What a montage of Cavaliers and Celtics playoff history as we get set for game number one tonight. The long-awaited start of the Eastern Conference Finals. Kush, what got into you? I'm probably same thing, right? Family wasn't around? you're watching the lottery, and you're building montages from old video clips or audio clips from four or five decades ago.
Yeah, that was all. There were clips in that of all six times so far that the Cavs and Celtics have played. I actually thought of originally doing something like this a couple of days ago, before Game 7 of Washington-Boston was done, thinking, you know what, when we finally get there, I'm going to put one of these together for each time that, you know, the Cavs have played whichever team comes out of this. It started because I was reading something about the Game 7 the other night. Yeah. This is the farthest that Washington has gone in the playoffs since 1979 when they lost the finals. And so my sports nerd historical mind.
Who'd they lose those finals to?
The Sonics.
There you go.
Who are now in Oklahoma City.
Was that 79, though? Why do I want to say that was 77?
No, 78.
No, 77 was the Blazers.
Yes.
Over
yes.
Philly.
Exactly. 78
right.
was Washington over the Sonics, which was a road game 7 win. Last time that happened until
that's
last
right.
June.
Okay, got it.
And
yep.
at 79, the Sonics got vengeance on them.
That was
so
Wes Unseld time and Elvin Hayes time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been a long time, obviously, coming here, the start of this series. Do you guys think that this long 9-day rest, I gotta tell you, I've been expecting the best because of what we've seen thus far in this Eastern Conference playoff for Cleveland. You know, the 4-game sweep against the Pacers, which was not easy. Very similar to last year. The 4-game sweep against the Pistons was not easy in the first round. For as sweeps go, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 4-game sweep of the Raptors in the semis were very, well, it seemed like a lot easier. And they just look like they're getting better and better. And I think we all kind of feel like, well, this is going to be a sweep as well of whichever team survived that Boston and Washington series. And it went 7 and here we go. It's time to start the beatdown. But there's part of me, and I don't know if it's just, historically, believing in this rust factor, but, you know, Boston is feeling pretty good. Excuse me. They're coming off of a Game 7 win, which, of course, just is a natural momentum builder. They're feeling really good, and Cleveland's been sitting there playing against themselves in practice and just working on drills and so on and so forth.
And incidentally, did you catch the other day?
Tonight is a questionable game. Go ahead.
And incidentally, did you catch the other day they stopped doing the harder practices because Edie Tavares, the guy they signed on the last day of the season, is, you know, end of the bench big man, busted himself in the scrimmage. And so basically Ty Lue then said, did you catch that the other? He's like, yeah, we're not doing this anymore until we start this series.
Yeah, how about that?
The only reason that I'm okay with what I'm seeing right now, and I'm personally thinking, Bob, that this is going to be a repeat of the 2015 Conference East Finals where the Hawks had the home court, yet the Cavs at the end of the day smacked them around in 4 straight. And part of that is, you made the comments on the two first rounds, Indiana this year, Detroit last year. And both of them were, even though they were sweeps, incredibly tough.
Yes.
What happened after the first round layoff, because the Cavs had a long wait both years, what happened in the semis? They absolutely demolished first the Hawks last year and then the Raptors this year. And I don't think rust is much of a factor. We certainly didn't see it after 8 days off in the last round.
But here's the thing, too. You know, the formula, if you will, has changed now, too, because they don't start at home. You know, they started each of those series at home, not Atlanta, like you talked about before, but this year, talking about the fact that they started both these at home, and now they got to start at Boston, at a place that's going to be wired. And, oh, by the way, LeBron James said that, too. He made a kind of a strange way that he phrased it, but he was asked basically about the Boston fans and how jacked they're going to be, and he said, you know what, they don't need any help getting jacked up because they're always...
It was just like, wow, it was like, okay, you know... be able to be a very, very good team and get the number one pick. They got the better side of that situation with Brooklyn, I'll tell you that. I don't think Boston fans need any more pumping up. You're born with pump. If that makes any sense, Mary.
The second part of that clip, obviously, the one I was focusing on, the fact that they got the number one pick, too, he commented on there, too. But I like it was kind of a weird way to say it. He said, I don't think they need to be any more pumped up. They're kind of born pumped, something of that nature. And it is. It's a very difficult place to play. The Cavaliers rolling them in their last game of the regular season in Boston, notwithstanding, it is not an easy place to play. Now, my concern about the long layoff and the rust, again, is just more of a, you know, historical thing. It's just, you know, generally speaking, teams that have long layoffs can come back a little bit rusty and sometimes are lucky to pull out a win even against a team that maybe they are far superior to. But here's the flip side of this. The flip side of the rest issue as it pertains to LeBron James and the Cavaliers. There are some statistics that Tom Haberstroh put together at ESPN.com that kind of indicate the rest might actually work in the Cavaliers' favor and against the Boston Celtics. Give these numbers a listen.
The big number. Today's big number is 42.8. That's LeBron James's player efficiency rating in his playoff career when he has at least 8 days of rest. Keep in mind, the average PER is 15, and the best PER of all time is 31.8. Yeah, 42.8 is pretty good.
Let's pause on that for a second. Did you catch that? The average player's PER, player efficiency rating, is 15. The greatest PER of all time is 31.8. LeBron James on 8 days rest.
Or more.
Or more is 42.8. You have to appreciate that for a second. I mean, let those numbers sink in. There's more.
So Celtics, congratulations on making it this far. Now you have to face a super rested LeBron. For Wednesday's Game 1, LeBron will have 9 days of rest for the first time in his playoff career. In the four games with 8 days of rest, here are his point totals. 34, 49, 44, and 24. And that measly 24 came last year against the Raptors when the Cavs won so badly that James sat the final 16 minutes of the game.
So in other words, I think we can expect about 47, 48 points from LeBron James tonight based on that little run there. 34, 49, 44, and then 24, but he sat 16 minutes. So you kind of protract that out.
Yeah.
That 24 becomes probably about 40. So you can kind of pencil in for a good somewhere in the mid-40s tonight based on at least that history of 8 days rest or more.
He shot 11 for 13 from the floor with not one, not two, not three, but four dunks.
James, quick spin move, it's finished.
He's never had more dunks in a playoff game. In fact, when you add it all up, in the four games that LeBron has rested for more than a week, he has tallied more points than minutes. That's not great news for Boston, who have lost six straight to LeBron in the playoffs. So if you're wondering how the King will look on Wednesday, all you have to do is look at that electrifying 42.8.
That 42.8 player efficiency rating. By the way, he said more points than minutes. If you wanted the totals there, I had them on the screen. You don't. 151 points in 150 minutes. So, yeah, about that rest versus rust factor, it apparently does not affect LeBron James. Will it affect the cohesiveness? Will it affect the hot hand of Kyle Korver? That's another story. Will it affect Kyrie Irving, who has not had a hot hand? Maybe this is the best thing in the world, you know, for Kyrie. Kyrie is playing tremendously well overall. He's still scoring 24 points a game in the playoffs. He had 25 a game in the regular season. His assist totals are up to 8.5 per game in that series against the Raptors, but his shooting percentage is down, particularly from distance. Kyrie, we know, being the marksman that he is, just a, you know, a complete dagger striker from the arc. This guy is only at about 29% from three in the playoffs thus far. Maybe for him, the 8 day or now 9 day rest between games will actually be a good thing. So it's just kind of interesting to kind of look at some of the history there. LeBron really thrives on the long rest, but we'll see whether or not the Cavaliers do or not. And by the way, how about that reaction from LeBron there at the beginning about the number one pick? It is just one of those rarities. You know what it is? Because they got that pick from the Nets. It reminds me to an extent, it's not apples to apples, but when Peyton Manning went down with his neck injury in his last year as a Colt, and they lost, what did they go, 2-14?
Yeah, he missed that whole season and they were horrible.
And he ended it, so they end up, it's not a 2-14 team. It's a talented team, but it's just missing its great quarterback. And they go 2-14. And it allows them to get the number one pick, and they get Andrew Luck, who's considered one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now. That's how I feel about Boston here. They're a very good team. They're in the conference finals, but because of a previous trade, they get the number one pick in the draft. So a really good team is going to get their Andrew Luck here, just to kind of mix those metaphors together there. And I think it's really amazing what's happening in Boston right now. Do either of you guys give this Boston team, with the momentum that they have, and as they are currently constituted, a chance of winning more than one game in this series, and is, and Frank, you can start, is the one game they're going to get, if it is only one, the first one?
Yeah.
Tonight? You think they take tonight?
I think, yeah, if they take a game, I think it's going to be tonight. I thought that was an awesome statistic. It was a great report. What was the magic number? 42.8?
Yeah, the average PER, according to Haberstroh, is 15. The greatest PER of all time is 31.8. But after 8 days of waiting or more, well, I guess it's just 8 days because there hasn't been more. He's never had a 9-day layoff in between playoff games, they said. But so 8 days of waiting between games, his is 42.8.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And the thing with the Cavs, as much as I've bashed the sitting out and resting the players, here we are. Cavs haven't lost yet in the playoffs. I can't really contradict anything that they've done so far.
You're getting silly. Now you're going to make me mad.
But Bob, if at the end of the day they win the championship, then who cares? Everything that happened up until now is meaningless.
Well, okay. See, now you're kind of mixing your own story there. Is it meaningless, or did it impact this? Did the rest that happened earlier in the season that you and I didn't care for make them put them in the position they are right now? Because that's what it sounded like you were saying in the beginning when I said you're making me mad. Now you're saying, if they win it, all of this was meaningless. It didn't matter. So it mattered or it didn't matter. Which one?
All of my criticism means nothing if they end up with the championship.
So you're saying the end justifies the means. But what I'm looking at, see, and this is where it's important, you guys, both of you. We can't just say the end justifies the means if all season long the Cavaliers were saying that the means here will provide the end. They're saying that this rest, this I'm giving Kyrie and Kevin and LeBron all the day off in Memphis, is going to help us win the championship in May. We're going to do that in January, and that's going to help us win the championship in May and June. I don't buy that. We're going to skip the game in L.A. against the Clippers, even though we're playing the Lakers the next night in the same building, so it's like back-to-back home games. We don't have to fly. There's no road trip in between. We play the game, go to a hotel, come back, play another game next day. It's just like home back-to-back. But we're going to sit it because, well, our eyes are on the postseason. We need the rest now for the postseason. And to me, that sounds so ridiculous and so stupid, considering the fact that the Cavaliers, when they tip it off tonight, will be playing their ninth game in 37 days. They've played eight times in 37 days. This will be their ninth. So all of the rest that their poor little legs needed, especially 26-year-old Kyrie Irving, who's probably feeling osteoporosis setting in if he plays that game in L.A. in March. And probably, I mean, my goodness, that Uncle Drew thing wasn't a skit. I mean, that's how he really feels on the weekends, with a cane, a walker, if he plays that game in Memphis back in December. all of that is crap. That didn't make them fresh-legged or legged. How would you say it? Fresh-legged? Fresh-legged. Yeah,
fresh-legged.
That's fine.
For Boston tonight, the fact that they swept Detroit, that was last year, swept Indiana and swept Toronto, and of course the fact that nothing you can control about it, but the other semifinal between the Wizards and the Celtics went seven, have provided you with 37 days off. The postseason schedule is, generally speaking, very friendly and conducive to resting the muscles, resting the joints, resting the bones, et cetera, just because they spread the games out.
Yep.
Even if there isn't a sweep, add a sweep or a series that ends in five while the other series goes seven, and you get more days off. So to me, this whole stuff, got to be fresh. We're taking the day off in December because we got to be fresh in June. It's just so much crap. Their bodies are finely tuned machines, and they are finely damn tuned enough to play 82 games and then still be fresh in June. And May and April at the start of the playoffs. See, that's the point.
Yeah.
Look how long the playoffs last. Playoffs last so freaking long. Why? Because they space the games out so much because of every game has to have its own primetime slot. No games can be playing against one another on TV battles. Every game gets its own primetime slot. And so they space it out so much, it's impossible to be tired in the postseason, for God's sake. That's why they're so crap about, well, you know, LeBron doesn't need to win in March because it's all about what he can do in May. And here he comes winning in May, and here's Frank going, yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, I didn't care about any of that stuff because they're winning now, so clearly it was the right thing to do. Well, no, it was an irrelevant thing to do. It did not impact. It does not impact how tired or not tired they are in May and in June.
No, that's absolutely true. The only thing it did impact is that's why we're in Boston tonight and not at the Queue. And that
Bingo.
Still grinds my gears, Me honestly.
Too. Me too. That chafes my shorts. And I don't know why I just sounded like Colonel Potter from MASH there, but I did.
And by the way, to answer your other question, you said, is this series going any more than five?
Oh, yeah.
For me, Bob,
answer and tick me off. You didn't get a chance.
No chance. I personally see a repeat of the 2015 East Finals, as I mentioned before, up to and including the no home court for the Cavs, and they still end up sweeping. Boston, tip your cap to them if this goes back to Boston for a game five. Honestly, I don't think there's any chance it goes beyond that. I'm calling sweep.
So you're calling sweep.
Darn right.
You said if they win one, it will be this one. Are you saying they will win this one, or are you also calling sweep?
No, I'm going to say they're going to win tonight. I think this game, I think the series goes five. Yes.
Okay. All right, you know what? I might as well be wrong again because I said five in the first series and five in the second series. I'll say five in this series, too. The only difference being, again, the formula because my – you know, traditional model that I was following for each of those previous predictions was the Cavaliers will win the first two at home and they'll lose game three, the first game in the new fight, you know, in front of the fired up fans of the opposing team that is desperate on their court, and then they'll come back and win the next two. That was my prediction, not much scientific to it. But now since this is reversed, I will kind of go the way I set this up, unless 42.8 changes my mind. I mean, right? I mean, Frank, how can we pick that?
Well, I know. That's why you threw that curveball right before the question.
Huh?
Said you threw that curveball right before the question. I had my answer all ready to go. I'm like, they're going to win at five. I think they're going to win tonight. And then you throw that incredible statistic at me, and it's like,
Yeah, but I threw that stat at you 10 minutes ago, and now I just asked you again, is it tonight? You said, yeah, calling a Celtics win tonight. You standing by it?
Yeah, I'm going to stand by it. I'll probably be wrong, but I'm going to stand by it.
Oh, I love it. I'll tell you what, I'm not. I'm not. I want to. My better judgment tells me, you know, practicing for eight or nine straight days while the other team is playing competitive basketball is a disadvantage for you. I want to pick Boston here. But 42-8 changes my mind. LeBron goes off, even if other guys are cold, LeBron goes off, and I will call a game two win for the Celtics in Boston. Then the Cavaliers win the next three to finish this thing up. So
I could buy that,
but I'm going to go game two.
And I could buy that scenario. If it goes five, Bob, I'm with you. That's the scenario will be if it goes five.
And again, my better judgment says no, it is game one, like tonight, like Frank is saying here, but 42.8 is turning me around. All right. Hey, before we take this time out and we talk to Boston, we're going to talk to Jeff Clark, CelticsBlog.com, get a little preview of things from their standpoint. Up there in Shamrock Country, if you will. I've got SmackDown tickets. You want to go see SmackDown? WWE SmackDown is at the Huntington Center next Tuesday, the 23rd, or this coming Tuesday, if you will. And I've got a couple of pairs. I'll give you one pair right now. Save one for tomorrow. So right now, caller number, I don't know. I should say 42 on behalf of 42.8. What's 4 plus 2 plus 8? That's 14, right? Caller 14 in honor of that 42.8 PER. Caller 14. You get the SmackDown tickets for Tuesday at the Huntington Center. Good luck to you. We'll come back and talk more hoops. Jeff Clark from Boston next.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We are indeed rolling along. It's 4:42. We got 18 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you right here on The Ticket. Drive time coming up with Miller is at 5 o'clock. We've been talking about the Cavaliers and Celtics for a lot of the afternoon. A lot of it was LeVar Ball as well. But let's talk about this series from a different perspective now as we head out to Boston. And we're joined now by Jeff Clark, who writes about the Celtics for CelticsBlog.com, which is, of course, an SB Nation website. Hey, Jeff, how you doing? Thanks for joining us here in Toledo.
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. Thanks. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it. You know, you guys have one of the most boring names ever for an SB Nation blog. Do you realize that?
It's very good for search engine optimization.
Okay. If that's what you're shooting for, you win. If you're looking for creativity, you guys lose. I mean, you know, the Pistons one is, you know, Detroit Bad Boys. You know, the Cavaliers one is Fear the Sword, you know, of the Mighty Cavalier. There's a bunch of them that are really, really creative. And when we reached out to you, we took a look at the Celtics blog. Boy, somebody didn't put a hell of a lot of thought into that one.
Well, we've been doing this since, 2006 or so. So we've been doing this for quite a long time. And back then there was, very few blogs. So we got in there early and set up the thing and we rolled with it.
Are you an originalist? Were you there at the beginning?
I'm the original creator.
Are you really? Well, that's awesome. So we're talking to the right guy here. That's very cool. Well, congratulations. That's outstanding. So you're 11 years old now. So that's a lot of good work. All right. Yeah. During the, start of our hour, my producer Jim played a montage of all six times that the Cavaliers and Celtics have played in the playoffs, and it's been some really, really tremendous stuff going all the way back to the 70s, and then of course through LeBron and his last games as a Cavalier before taking his talents to South Beach. It's kind of an interesting history between these two teams, but not a bit of that matters, I would think, right now, given the way LeBron James has just steamrolled his way through two opponents in eight games, two straight sweeps, and given the fact that the Celtics are riding high with a Game 7 victory over Washington. So does history here between these two teams matter, or are we just, you know, a blank slate tonight?
Well, I think LeBron is always going to have a special place in his heart for the Boston crowd and for the Celtics in general. I think he wants to beat them, you know, in particular, but I think he's also focused on bigger things. He's focused on his dynasty and winning championships. And so, the Celtics are just another, brick on the road. So, and the Celtics, you know, LeBron James and the Cavs, they're the defending champs. They're the guy and the team that we have to get through in order to get to the championship. And so, I don't think anybody needs any additional motivation here. Although, you know, the Celtics are the perennial, this particular team is the perennial underdogs. They wake up in the morning feeling slighted by their dog. So, I mean, they're going to look for any motivation they can get. And so they roll into this series feeling like nobody's counting, or everybody's counting them out. And, you know, they're going to play the role of underdogs and see if they can upset and shock the world.
Is there any belief in Boston that world shocking can happen? And I'm sure there are some certain fans, but I mean, is there any kind of an overarching, feeling that, you know what, these guys are ripe for a fall? We can do this. We just took down the Wizards, and it was a tremendous series, and we answered the bell, blah, blah, blah. Is there any feeling, or is there kind of a feeling of resignation that, you know, our time might come, but it isn't here yet? Look at the way LeBron James is playing.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a resignation amongst the fans. In that locker room, everybody believes that they can win. And there's a lot of people who are, diehards that believe in the team no matter what. But I think for the most part, fans are realistic. They realize that, you know, the Cavaliers just have more talent right now, at the top of their roster. And, you know, they also happen to have LeBron James. And until that changes, it's going to be really, really hard to get past them. So, you know, I think for the most part, Celtics fans are feeling like this is their ceiling. This is, they've reached their ceiling, and anything else they get right now is gravy. And especially, you know, with the future looking bright based on the winning the top overall pick last night. And, we feel like we're building towards something. It's just not something that we think we're going to get to and arrive at this year.
Jeff Clark is my guest. He is the founder of Celtics Blog, in addition to being a contributing writer for it, which is a tremendous blog on SB Nation. Let me ask you before we go on about this series, about what happened last night. I mean, it's just one of those trippy things. The Celtics are too damn good right now to be getting the number one overall pick. It kind of put me in mind of the Colts the year that Peyton Manning went down with his neck injury and missed the entire season. They go 2-14, even though they're not a 2-14, they're pretty much a playoff team, and they get the number one pick and get Andrew Luck, who replaces Peyton Manning, and on they go. It's kind of like that. This is a rich team getting richer here with this number one overall pick. What do you think they're going to do with this, Jeff? Isaiah's a superstar. Even though he's only a 5'9" superstar, he's a superstar.
Yeah.
Can they really take Markelle Fultz, a point guard? Do you already have this point guard, or is there a chance they move this pick?
Oh, I absolutely believe that they can take Markelle Fultz and play them together. Where not only is Markelle Fultz a taller point guard, but he's a guy who can play off the ball. Isaiah Thomas can also play off the ball. We're seeing a rise of small ball lineups and five out lineups. Both of them can shoot. Both of them can fit perfectly within Brad Stevens' system. They're also, you know, friends. They get along. They both have a connection with the University of Washington. And, you know, they've already talked about the fact that they would be excited about playing with each other if they had that opportunity. So I think that it fits a lot better than you initially think of. And I think that there's a path for them to fit perfectly together within the system.
Is Fultz a can't miss prospect?
He certainly seems like it. He's got all the tools on the offensive end. He's got size, athleticism, shooting ability. He just seems to tick down all the check marks, and I think he's got the potential to grow in a defensive way as well. So he seems like the guy with the highest floor and perhaps the highest ceiling in the draft.
More so than Lonzo Ball.
I think so. I think Lonzo has a little bit more bust potential, and certainly an excellent, fantastic player. But there's just a little bit more in terms of can't miss potential in Markelle Fultz.
The only reason I ask is, again, you know, Fultz is a ball dominant guy. He's a scoring point guard. He's, you know, like a lot of today's, you know, the Hardens and the Westbrooks and the Currys and guys like that. And obviously so is Isaiah. I just, you know, you said they can play together. Is either one of them going to be happy when the other guy's got the basketball, especially if they're running the offense? Because they just seem like very, very similar type of players.
Well, I think so, because, you know, neither one of them is going to be like a Rajon Rondo, who's a pound the ball until the last possible second and then pass off and look for an assist. They're both good at playing without the ball and letting the offense come to them. And, you know, you've seen Isaiah Thomas thrive in a system where a lot of times he gives the ball away and he has to go run around for a little while and then he gets open. So if the ball is going through the hoop and they're getting wins, that's going to be the best chemistry ever.
One of the big rumors at the trading deadline, we're talking to Jeff Clark of CelticsBlog.com to get kind of an update on the Celtics as we start game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. One of the big rumors was, of course, that the Celtics were trying to, you know, perhaps acquire Jimmy Butler, trying to acquire Paul George, and of course Danny Ainge did not want to part with that pick, and now we know there's a good reason why. Ended up with the ping pong balls working right for them, and it is the number one pick. But it was thought to be pretty hot and heavy, those conversations. So you're saying there's no chance they take this pick now and acquire a proven star? That's the reason I ask if you thought Fultz was a can't miss, because it's one thing for a guy to be, you know, a great prospect that you think can develop into a star. It's another thing to grab a guy who's already a star, especially at a different position than the one where your star currently resides, which is point guard. If you get a win star, and maybe the time to win is now as opposed to let's see what he develops in 3 to 4 years, any chance that happens, Jeff?
I mean, there's always a chance. I mean, I just think that when we got the top overall pick, trading that pick dropped considerably because of the can't-miss nature of Markelle Fultz. And because Fultz can be a cornerstone in your franchise for the next 10 years. If you trade that pick for a established star right now, you know, they're in the prime of their career. They're right in the meat of it, and you may not have them forever. They might, and in the case of Paul George, we don't even know if he's amenable to re-signing here long term. So sure, you would have to, you know, get some kind of assurance from him that he would be willing to re-sign, despite the rumors and the insinuation going around that he wants to play for LA after his contract expires next year. And there's also the possibility that the Celtics can create enough cap room to make a max offer a guy like Gordon Hayward this offseason, in which case we wouldn't have to give up anything in order to get him. So there's other avenues and other opportunities to go without having to pay through the nose and give up this first overall pick. And I think that's one of the main reasons why Danny Ainge, you know, sat on his assets and didn't do anything at the trade deadline.
I like how you phrase that. That's a good turn of phrase. He did. He sat on those assets. We're talking to Jeff Clark with CelticsBlog.com, the founder of CelticsBlog.com, a part of SB Nation. Getting back now to the issue of the series that starts tonight, our friend Jim Cushlin has a question for you on that.
Yeah, and looking at this series, there's a lot of things that have obviously been talked about, even when it wasn't official, when the Wizards series and Celtics series was still going on. But I got to tell you, Jeff, to me, from my perspective as a Cavs guy, I think the biggest key for Boston in this series, they have to get good production out of Al Horford. He's been, quite frankly, very, very good, I thought, in the first two rounds. One of the keys to the Celtics being here, but his history in the playoffs, granted those were with those Atlanta teams, but his history in the playoffs against the Cavs has been Horford falling flat on his face. Do you agree that in order for the Celtics to have any kind of chance, got to have a gigantic series on Al Horford?
Oh, absolutely. He is the cornerstone and the linchpin of the Celtics at this point. And he's one of the reasons why Isaiah Thomas had such a breakout, you know, amazing season, even higher levels than he had in his All-Star season the previous year. And part of it is because Al Horford just does so many things that free up guys like Isaiah Thomas. And one of the things, too, is, like, you know, the Cavs and other teams in the past have done a great job of trapping Isaiah Thomas and make sure you get the ball out of his hands. Well, when you do that, the natural outlet is to send it into to Al Horford, who then makes perfect, usually very, very excellent reads on what to do with the ball next. He becomes the high post center point guard on the floor. So he makes the decision whether or not to pass, take a shot himself, in which case he's, you know, gotten him a lot better from outside, and he's developed a three-point shot, and when he wants to, he can also take the ball to the hoop. Whether or not he can do it against the Cavs, I don't know. We're about to find out.
Music is playing, Mr. Clark, so we don't have any more time to analyze. Give us a prediction before you go, though. How many games, and how do you see it ending?
I think the Celtics steal two games, but ultimately the Cavs win in six.
Cavaliers in six, says Jeff Clark, the founder of CelticsBlog.com. Jeff, I really appreciate the analysis. I'd like to talk to you again maybe as the series goes on, especially if it is a longer series, and we'll kind of break it down from there. Sound all right?
Sounds good.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. That is all the time that we've got. I do have to tell you that Andrew Lumbreezer. I said it four ways and all of them wrong. Andrew Lumbreezer of Sylvania is going to SmackDown on Tuesday at Huntington Center. Congratulations. We'll give you another pair of those tomorrow on the program. Stay where you are, because Mike Miller has got your drive time coming up right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Have a great day. Great day. Bye-bye.